You are listening to a free podcast of The Majority Report with Sam Cedar. To support the show and receive nearly an hour extra material daily, become a member today at majority.fm. Resistance is futile.
The Majority Report with Sam Cedar.
The destiny of America is always safer in the hands of the people than in the conference rooms of any elite.
Sam Cedar.
They are unanimous in their hate for me, and I welcome their hatred.
We must guard against the acquisition of unwarranted influence, whether sought or unsought, by the military-industrial complex.
The Majority Report with Sam Cedar.
Ever get the feeling you've been cheated?
It is Monday, August 5th, 2013. My name is Matt Binder.
And I am Michael Brooks, and this is Matt and Michael Monday on the Majority Report.
Now, we have a very special show for you all today.
A young talent.
Coming at you. Some new up-and-comer. Never heard of him before. Well, you'll hear about him now. He goes by the name Samuel Cedar. But for some reason, he thinks he'll get some sort of cred by just going by
He's
Sam.
He's got a show business thing going on with Sam Cedar. He's a little bit of a prima donna, a little bit hard to work with, but we thought he was so talented that he was worth taking a shot on. And
I actually think we sort of gave him the shot because of the great interview that Jody Jacobson of RH Reality Check gave him.
Yeah.
It's more credit to her than really
More
that.
Credit to her than him. Frankly, with her, anybody. Geraldo could give a good interview with her. And that's saying something, folks. As you can imagine,
It's been our break here on the Majority Report, so this is a pre-record.
We're not live.
We're enjoying actual
vacations, unlike Sam, because we don't have family and responsibility.
We don't. We have none of that.
We have a little responsibility.
The most minute of responsibility one can have.
Family we're not directly accountable for.
That's very true.
So, folks.
So what have you been doing on your vacation so far, Michael?
I have been sleeping.
Sleeping.
I have been reading. I've been going to Prospect Park.
Have you been putting together that guest list?
I have been theoretically putting together this guest list. See, if all is going according to plan, folks, this vacation will not really have been much of a vacation for yours truly.
Yes.
My punishment for going off and meditating. But anyways, we'll be back live. Not tomorrow, but the tomorrow that you're hearing this.
Not our tomorrow, but yes, your tomorrow.
Your tomorrow.
Our tomorrow is Tuesday, July, whatever Tuesday, July 30th. Your tomorrow... August 6th, we will be back live.
Sam will be back at you. Fresh material. And then the following Monday, another Matt and Michael Monday.
Yes.
So we broke some news today, folks. So we're a little pumped about that. With Reza Aslan interview.
Oh, yes. But
that's happened like today, the 29th.
Our today.
Sorry.
Your last week.
I shouldn't mess with the space-time continuum so much. Enjoy the show. This is an excellent interview. And the final week, the final day of a week of all new material while we were on break.
Take care.
Take care.
See you live tomorrow.
My name is Sam Cedar. Continuing on with our coverage from Netroots Nation 2013, joining me now is Jody Jacobson. She is the editor-in-chief of rhrealitycheck.org. Jody, what does the RH stand for?
Stands for reproductive health.
Okay, so reproductive health, reality check. Let's talk about what's happening in Congress this past week, because I think for a long time on the left, there was a perception that the idea of reproductive rights was at the very least settled. And in fact, going back not that far ago, 6-8 years, there was at least a push by some in the Democratic establishment that what really needs to happen now is we just need to sort of be more open with our language and be more, accommodating to people who disagreed with that perspective. Give me your sense of, analyze whether or not that was a good idea and whether or not it brought us to this point.
What the Democrats' role in things?
Yeah, indeed.
Yeah, I mean, I think that for a long time, after Roe v. Wade and some of those other, you know, really important decisions that came down from Casey decision, et cetera, what we didn't realize was that there was a sort of bubbling up of opposition from the far right that started in, you know, the 80s and 90s. And they began pushing back on women's reproductive rights. And so as part of that, which was partly out of religious beliefs, the Democrats later started to say, you know what, we have to be open, we have to have an open tent, let's, you know, show that we are inclusive. And they had things like Democrats for Life, and they started talking about common ground and doing all this work to. And the problem is that you really cannot have common ground with a group, and that's a broad-based group of people in the far right, who don't have any interest in anyone having access to birth control, access to abortion care, access to other forms of reproductive health care. So, yeah, I do think that the Democrats' positioning of themselves has, in fact, helped lead to this place because it created the false sense that a compromise was possible mm-hmm. when no compromise is possible. And it sort of follows every other thing you see, like immigration or, you know, bank reform or whatever. The right just goes way right or way off the charts. And the Democrats try to follow thinking, well, if we just give them something, they're going to come back to it. But they don't. And so that's where we are with this issue.
The fascinating thing when it comes to reproductive rights that I think has happened, because, you know, when jumping forward now to really this past week, but
right.
not just this past week, really the past year or two, I think it's come in very stark relief for those people who thought accommodation was possible, that when we're talking about abortion and access to abortion, abortion rights and sovereignty over a woman having sovereignty over her own reproductive system, that it's a far larger issue for them on the right
yes.
than simply abortion.
Absolutely.
I mean, it just speak
it's
to that.
It's absolutely more of an issue. I mean, you hear, you know, here and there the smattering of guys in the party that will say, well, women really belong in the home or they're natural places to take care of the children. We don't want to pass an Equal Pay Act because they don't need to be working. I mean, it's all of this sort of patriarchal and the way things were kind of idea, this idealized notion that we all were happy in this patriarchal family structure. You know, gay people can't raise children, women should be in the home. All of these things that are said are part and parcel of this idea of the world in which the true nature of women is to be domestic and to stay home with the children and to have them. So, yeah, it's not just about abortion. Abortion is kind of a, you know, a lightning rod issue that they've used based on this, you know, issue of the baby. Let's save the baby. But when the baby's born, nobody seems to care about the baby.
Right. Well, I mean, the idea being that abortion for them, I think they perceive it as the leverage point
yes.
for this broader worldview.
Yes.
And which I think you rightly include is also based on, has economic implications for women. It has the idea that they cannot go out and function in the workforce. And we saw it in the past 2 weeks when it was a function of women becoming a larger percentage of those who are the breadwinner in the family. And so give me your sense of how now, and this week in Congress, the Republicans have passed what by all accounts is anybody at this point unconstitutional law. It will not get any further. But give me your sense of how you think that same establishment on the left is now, are they repositioning? Is there an awareness now that that was a failed strategy before?
I definitely think that progressives in Congress and women in Congress know it was a failed strategy of accommodation. I think that, again, you know, it's important to really articulate and come out to understand what your values are and have other people understand them and not sort of muddy them up with saying, we're going to compromise. Well, compromise to what? To the point where a woman who, which woman who doesn't want to be pregnant is going to be forced into pregnancy for that compromise? Which woman who's got fetal anomalies is going to be forced to carry to term for that compromise? When you come down to actual individual people, I think people are beginning to realize, and certainly the women in Congress realize, that this is not about that kind of strategy because that they're not interested in that kind of strategy.
And do you think that there is a greater assertiveness? I mean, I just, you know, as you talk about that, I'm thinking about, you know, what's happening in terms of sexual assault in the military. And do you think that there's a greater assertiveness by the women in Congress?
Absolutely.
Right now?
Absolutely. I think they have really reached a tipping point where, particularly around these two issues, sexual assault in the military and the abortion care issue, you know, many of those women in Congress have had their own abortions. Jackie Speier, one of them, who had a very difficult abortion issue, pregnancy. So they've been there. They know that. You know, they've been talking to the women in the military who've been sexually assaulted. So all of these things, yes, I think it's created a tipping point where they're, you know, legitimate anger and frustration at the way things have been run is coming out and is propelling forward efforts to change these things. And, you know, you see some of this legislation proposed around the sexual assault stuff, for example, to take it out of the chain of command. I think all of those things are good in a way because they've forced the energy back to where it should be.
Yeah, it's sort of a fascinating turn of events, and it's going to be interesting to see where it goes from here. Okay, the website is rhrealitycheck.org. Editor-in-Chief Jody Jacobson, thank you so much.
Thank you for having me. Thank you so much for having me.
At Netroots Nation, and we will be back in just a moment after this. Okay, so we're back with Jody Jacobson. We're at Netroots Nation 2013. Jody, you know, we were just talking about the evolution of the strategy or the failure of the strategy back in 2004, 2006. I mean, even Hillary Clinton was talking, we need to be more accommodative to people who disagree with the perspective of giving women of choice. Not necessarily. I mean, it was always sort of a failed policy in some respects because, you know, It implied in some ways that it was just rhetorical for them.
Right.
And as
right.
opposed to wanting, you know, so somebody, somewhere that was going to break down. I want to talk about your sense of whether, and I think clearly we've seen it on a political level, but my sense is that starting with this past election, particularly around March of 2012, I guess it was, when the Obama administration made the decision to issue their contraceptive
guidelines
for the Affordable Care Act. The timing of it seemed a little bit weird to me at the time. I mean, they didn't need to do that at that time.
Mm-hmm.
But it certainly, essentially, was like dropping a grenade into the Republican primary.
Right.
Give me your sense. Do you think that there was political calculation there?
Could have been. I mean, I frankly initially thought they were not smart not to do it way earlier when they could have done it. And instead, they went through this whole two-year process of review and what have you with the IM, the Institutes of Medicine. And I understood that there was a justification issue. They wanted to get the medical professionals on board. But on the other hand, I thought, you know, this is going to blow up around election time and then we're going to have this problem and you're going to have to backtrack. But on the other hand, you could see it as something of a strategy to say, you know, we want to really force these guys' hands and make it clear that they are against women having access to birth control. And certainly that's the way it played out.
It certainly played out that way.
It certainly played out that way.
And it became, I think, one of two of the major narratives of that campaign for much of that year.
And the GOP didn't help themselves because, you know, let's face it, a whole row of men and three panels on hearings on contraceptive care and denying women spots and that kind of thing. You know, the optics of all of it was just crazy out of
control. And it was like basically handing Rick Santorum a loaded gun that was that was like he was just wasn't sure, or you know, maybe it's really more it was like a fire hose,
right?
And he just could not control. That was just spraying all
right.
over the place.
Right.
Forgive me for.
I know
that's possible with Santorum that it could have a lot of multiple meanings. But do you think that, and maybe this had been brewing for some time, but for a long time, at least through the past 15 years or so, there was sort of this backlash against feminism. And in some ways, we've gotten past to where it's no longer labeled as a feminist.
Right.
In fact, I am wearing a sticker that I got from the Upworthy guys. It said, "Women are my equals." Oh, great. Guess I'm a feminist now.
Right.
And this sort of captures sort of a lot of the dynamics that have been in play with these type of politics in that people were afraid of referring to themselves
right.
as a feminist. Here it's sort of mocking the idea
right.
that what was truly a feminist concept
right.
could now be considered feminist.
Right.
And so do you think that there has been a change in younger women in particular in the way that they view feminism and these issues and whether or not they're related in some fashion, or that the Republicans have gone so far that it has sort of rekindled a battle that other people thought was dead? I mean,
right. I think that you know, feminism has been so stigmatized. I think about feminism and I think, you know, that basic bumper sticker saying, it's the radical notion that women are people. And, you know, that's how I think of feminism, that me, my daughter, we have rights, and we have rights equal to my son and, you know, my ex-husband or whatever. And that, that's the way it should be. And I think that the stigmatization of the word feminist carries on even now among many younger women. You know, you hear actresses say, well, I'm not really a feminist, or younger women say, well, I'm not really a feminist, I don't identify as that. And I think it's because you got this sort of like feminists hate men and they, you know, just look a certain way or they do certain things. And it's not true, but the question I ask myself is, I don't really so much care if someone calls themselves a feminist or not. I really care about what they're working toward and what their objectives are. If your objective is, you know, fairness and equity for all people, then I'm with you, whether you call yourself a feminist or the Green Spaghetti Monster. I do think it's important for people to realize that it's okay to be a feminist, because
right.
really what we're here to say is that women are people and they deserve rights. And that's what feminism is. There's not really, other people can interpret it. It's kind of like, you know, when people argue about the interpretations of the Bible or the Quran, well, you can argue many
right.
different interpretations, but, you know, you can also embrace them as things that you value and then move on and take what you need from it and move on.
I mean, it's interesting because I, you know, this is one of those instances where I think that the relevance of the term is, it's far less, I think, than I would have imagined a while back, insofar as there seems to be, if one was to, again, sort of analyze where particularly younger generations are,
right.
They are adopting feminist principles.
Absolutely.
And perhaps unknowingly, and great in that respect. I mean,
Part of it is that I think they grew up in a time when they didn't have to think about whether they were going to be equal. They didn't have to think about whether they were going to have access. Some, not all, obviously. And so it becomes less of a need to label yourself as something.
Right.
But now that the attacks are coming on these things, I think that's why the GOP and the far right suffers from such a lack of support among young people. Because they're completely on different sides of these issues in so many respects. And those are feminist goals, but they should be goals of everyone. Equity of opportunity, equity of participation, those things. And so I think, again, the label doesn't seem, people don't want to embrace the label, which I find a little bit problematic, but like I said, okay.
Well, what's problematic about that?
Because it seems to send that message that there's a stigma to being a feminist. And why is there a stigma? Just because you've got an outdated notion of what being a feminist really means.
Right. I mean, I vacillate back and forth because it's somewhat parallel to the word liberal. And,
right.
You know, I self-ID as a feminist.
Right.
But I, you know, it's almost as if the acceptance of the principles of feminism have become so widespread at this
right.
point that it almost does not make sense to hang on to that. Because now it's almost sort of, because for me, feminism was always sort of some form of humanism, right?
Right.
I mean, human
right.
beings, everybody deserves a basic set of rights, and that's it.
Yeah.
We just call it feminist because in this instance, it is being advocated specifically for women, but in fact,
right.
these principles
apply
to everyone.
Well, I think there's two issues. One is feminism per se challenges the status quo of the patriarchy and, you know, the normative heterosexual family and all that stuff. So that's a problem on the side of people who think that women have a certain role. And then the other side is that parts of the feminist movement are responsible for the stigma because they had rigid views of what it meant to be a feminist. Like, you can't wear makeup and be a feminist. You can't do this and be a feminist. And I feel like, hey, you know, like, I'm not really worried about whether so-and-so changed their last name or didn't change their last name. What are they fighting for? That's
right.
my concern. So I think a part of it came from kind of like, I don't want your rigid, you know, outward badge. I want to do what I need to do to express myself. And I think rather than self-expression, we should be looking at political expression for feminism.
Right. And, you know, it's interesting, too, because we've mentioned this a little bit in, at the beginning of the interview, but when this whole stuff about the women becoming sort of primary
breadwinners,
yeah. It was just so stunning to me because all I remembered was Dan Quayle talking about
yeah.
Murphy Brown. And I just thought, these guys, it's sort of like it went away for, I don't know, date 20 years.
Yeah.
No, over 20 years ago, right? That statement, I think, was made. And now it's back. It's just stunning.
Yes,
it's,
it is,
I mean,
stunning.
It's almost as if the clock is just moving in a different direction
yes.
for these people, like that they had sort of almost, you know, ventured out of the dark ages. Now we're sort of headlong running back into it.
Right.
What accounts for that, do you think, on the right?
I think fear in so many ways. Fear of the United States becoming, you know, a minority white population. Fear of the United States not being the most powerful on earth, however we define that. You know, the corporate money in the right and its pushing of these crazy notions of, you know, corporations being people and individuals. It just, I think there's so much behind it. There's no one thing. It's the whole zeitgeist of their view of the world and the feeling that they're losing power over it, I think, is the most frightening to them.
I mean, it seems encouraging in terms of the broader culture in this country and everything that's going to happen and that naturally follows in terms of legislation. On one hand, when you look at the sort of the forest, but there around the states, there are trees, if you will,
yes.
that are pretty bleak.
Pretty bleak.
Because almost a similar dynamic as to what we see with sort of the split between the Republicans and their sort of congressional aspirations
right.
and their national aspirations.
Right.
We see half a dozen states in this country where there is far less access to reproductive rights than there were 10 years ago.
Yes.
Is that accurate?
5 years ago. Absolutely. I mean, you've got states like Mississippi and North Dakota where there literally is one clinic left that provides safe abortion care. And then you've got, you know, a total lack of availability of contraception, comprehensive sex ed, high rates of unintended pregnancy, teen pregnancy in Mississippi, for example. It's just going back. I mean, going backward, you know, it's not even going backward. It is there. It's already there. So, yeah, you have these bleak landscapes across the United States. And what they're trying to do is pick off each piece and suddenly the whole puzzle looks like that.
So we just got a minute or two left here. Give me a sense of how that plays out. I mean, give me a sense where you anticipate this leads in 5 years.
Well, it's hard to say because it really depends on court cases that are coming up. I think there's a vibrant movement resurgence of protecting our rights. I think people really now see what they didn't see before. So I predict that the more critical the situation becomes, the more active people in places like Texas who are already today, there's a civilian filibuster of the anti-abortion bill that's up there. They're doing a whole, the hundreds of people are there to filibuster as civilians. I think people are really motivating and activating because they are now waking up to realize. So I think in 5 years, we may see a very different landscape, especially if Roe is overturned. But I think actually, like someone said, you know, thank God for Prop 8 because it galvanized a movement toward marriage equality.
Right.
It may be that because we're losing what we thought we had and we took for granted, that we galvanize a movement to get it back.
Jody Jacobson, the site is rhrealitycheck.org. Thanks so much for
talking. Thank you. Thank you so much.
Say it's an apple pay.